topic. It's Parshas Pinchas. And there's a famous Haftorah Parshas Pinchas. The Haftorah Parshas Pinchas is the story of Eliyahu HaNavi. What is this? Very briefly, the story of Eliyahu HaNavi. Anybody are familiar? Well,
eating the
bread.
Right, that's part of it. But there is the prominent part in Tanakh is bringing the fire down from Shemayim and destroying the priests of Baal, and then the aftermath after that. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that is the Haftorah for Parshas Pinchas. There are actually some ideas that Eliyahu is a descendant of Pinchas, he's a Gilgal of Pinchas, Eliyahu is descended from a bunch of different people. But he's connected in that way. What is the story of Pinchas? Anybody? What's the story of Pinchas? Yes?
He found out from Moses that a certain way to stop a plague was to impale a prince and his concubine.
There was Zimri and Cozbi. One was the Nasi of the tribe of Shimon, and one was the princess of Moab. And they were having relations in the middle of the camp. So Pinchas realized that the weight and the plague going on around them. So Pinchas went and stabbed them both, and that was able to stop the plague. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the story of Pinchas. After that, Pinchas becomes the Kohen, and then the parsha moves on. Okay, so what does the story of Eliyahu HaNavi particularly have to do with the story of Pinchas? Let's review a little bit about what the story of Eliyahu HaNavi is. Eliyahu HaNavi lived during a time of bitter Avodah Zarah. There was much difficulties in being a non-Avodah Zarah person. That's the situation he lived. And the story picks up, really not in the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas, but in the Haftorah of Parshas Kisisa. And some of it is revealed by the Gemara, pretty much the last Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, if you're familiar with Perek Chelek, where a lot of Agathas is discussed. So pretty much the very end of that is discussing the story of Eliyahu HaNavi. And the Gemara picks up with the following story, that there's somebody named Chil. He was a builder, and he decided to build Jericho. So those that learned the book of Yehoshua had imposed a curse on anybody who tries building the city of Jericho, that their children would die. And lo and behold, one by one, this person killed his children, die. So as he lays the last brick of Jericho, his last child dies. So Eliyahu HaNavi, and along with Achav is the evil king, so the two of them are both paying a shiva call to Chel. And Achav, who is the king, opens up his mouth and says, you know, you might think that your children died because you rebuilt Jericho. But don't worry, that's not the case. Because even though God promises a certain amount of punishment, he never actually follows through on any of those punishments. So what is the example he brought? So the example he brought is from Shema. It says, "V'sartem v'adatem elokim acherim v'shach v'sem lahem." Right? You shouldn't go, and if you're going to go and bow down to other gods, right? What's going to happen? V'charaf Hashem b'chem yatzar Shemam v'liyamatar. God is going to cause the rain to stop. If you bow down to other gods, God will cause the rain to stop. And Achav says, "Look around. Everybody's bowing down to other gods, but don't worry. I don't see the rain stopping." Right? So what do you see? You see that even though God promised certain punishments, he doesn't actually follow through. So to you, even though God had promised a punishment and it looks like it may have happened, don't worry, it's not really having to do with your punishment. So Eliyahu, one of you is sitting there, and he's not very happy about this. He says, oh yeah, you think this rain is going to continue? And Eliyahu stops it from raining. He causes it to stop. The rain stops, and then Eliyahu goes and he disappears for a while. He lives by the cave with the water going by until it dries up, and that's the story of Eliyahu in the beginning. So after a while, time goes by, and there's a tremendous famine in the land, and nobody has anything to eat or what to drink. So somebody is called to, Eliyahu is called to bring a child back to life, And this is an idea that the Gemara discusses, that that Elio has certain powers and he has to exchange his power of holding back the rain for the power of bringing this kid back to life. And he doesn't. So Eliyahu surrenders, however that works. Eliyahu surrenders, he earns the ability to bring the child back to life, bring the child back to life. But God says to him, listen Eliyahu, you gave up your right to hold back the rain, I'm now going to make it rain. So Eliyahu says, whoa, hold on, let's take advantage of this situation. Right? It hasn't rained for a while, let's take advantage. So he goes and he challenges Ahab, in this story about how he goes and approaches Ahab. He goes and he challenges Ahab, he says, all you people are serving Baal, the Avodah Zarah Baal, well, let's have it out. We'll have a contest. Who will win? God versus Baal. So that's what happens on Har Carmel. Har Carmel is, I think, near Haifa today. I think they actually, if you go to Haifa, you can go visit Har Carmel. And he calls everybody, all the Jews are there, and you have the priests of Baal there, and the Gemara gives some other backgrounds into some of the things that happened. How are they going to know the Korban is accepted? Right? They're both going to offer a sacrifice, and whichever one is accepted is going to win. So how are you going to know? So the assumption is you'll know. So the Avodah Zarah of Baal, they actually hid somebody in the Mizbeach, in the altar, so that when they put the bull on top of it, he'll light the bull on fire, and everybody will be shocked. It will be amazing. But lo and behold, the snake comes and eats and bites that guy, and he dies. Okay, so the priests of Baal go first. They put their bull on the mizbeach, and they start offering their chants to Baal. Oh Baal, please accept our sacrifice. Please accept our sacrifice. And it doesn't work. So Eliyahu and Navi is kind of sitting there on the side, like leaning against the pole, saying like, maybe your God is having, he's tired. Maybe he's sleeping right now. You might want to call out a little bit louder. So they all start calling out a little bit louder. Oh Baal, please. And Eliyahu says, maybe if you, that cutting thing that you guys do sometimes, like Avodah Zarah people, they cut themselves. So maybe you guys should do that. So they start doing that, they cut their face, whatever it is that they. It's actually described in the Navi itself. It's like picking on them. He's prodding them on. He's mocking them, and. There's actually a famous line that he says to the Jewish people at this point when it started, Vaygash El Yawas Kola'am, that everybody is there, Vayom El Kola'am, Vayomer An Masai Atem Postim Al Shtei Hasifim. How long will you continue to dance between these two poles? Meaning the Jewish people are, there are priests of Baal, there are people that encourage Avodah Zarah, and then the Jewish people are like kind of in between. They do the God thing and they do the Avodah Zarah thing, and they're in between. So Yahweh Navi says, guys, it's time to choose at this point. And that's how he sets up the contest. And the priests of Baal finally, after yelling at the top of their lungs and after bleeding themselves and all these other things, they finally collapse and they say, all right, we're too tired, we give up. Our korban's not going to be accepted. So then Eliyahu Navi takes some water, he pours some water on top of his bowl, and he calls out to Hashem, famously, Anini Hashem, Anini, Hashem, answer me, Hashem, answer me, Hashem, answer me. And a fire comes down from Shemayim and consumes the sacrifice. What did all the Jews do? All the Jews say, wow, that was amazing. They pronounce Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, like the end of Yom Kippur, right? God is, Hashem is our God, Hashem is our God. They accept, they run, then they say, wait a second, who brought us to this situation? Ah, the priests of Baal! So they start running after the priests of Baal, and they kill a bunch of priests, they kill a bunch of the priests of Baal over the course of that day, and it seems like everything is wonderful. All the activity of Eliyahu HaNavi. That is the famous story of Eliyahu HaNavi. However, the story continues. The story continues. What happens next? So Eliyahu, the word is going to get back to Ahab, or Ahab goes back, I think, to go tell Isabel. That's actually the conclusion of the Haftorah of Kitisa. So the Haftorah of Pinchas then picks up that it was right after that, and he ran in front of Ahav, Bayaris Lifnei Ahav, Ad Boacha Yisraela. Who's Yisraela? Yisraela is evil king Isabel, known as, for some reason, her English name is more famous than her Hebrew name, Isabel. He runs in front of Isabel, and word gets to her. So Ahab tells Jezebel all the things that happened to Eliyahu, and that he killed all the Nevi'im, and Ahab seems like he's pretty impressed. Ahab is like, wow, Eliyahu did a pretty good job. To which Jezebel responds, please go send the message to Eliyahu that tomorrow I'm going to kill him. So Eliyahu HaNavi, what does he do? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, Eliyahu says, oh yeah? What do you mean? I got all the Jews on my side now. Why don't you start up with me now? Right? He says, tomorrow I'm going to kill you. Eliyahu, rather than gathering his army, runs away and says to Hashem, there's no hope for the Jewish people. It's not going to work. Comes a malach, and he says, there's no hope for the Jewish people, and he says, I want to die. He says, I'm ready to die. Vayishal es nafsho lamus. Vayomer ravata Hashem kach nafshi, ki lo tov anochi me'avuzai. Please take my soul, because I'm no greater than any of my forefathers. Instead, he doesn't die. He gets put into a deep sleep. He's woken up. He gets food. Eventually, he is then shown the image of the prophecy of the great sound. So he's shown a great sound, whatever that means, and the Navi tells us Hashem wasn't in the sound. Hashem tells us this tornado, he wasn't in the tornado. He shows this great wind, he wasn't in the wind. Ultimately, there was a great fire, he wasn't in the fire. And then ultimately, at the end, there was a kol demamad daka. What is a kol demamad daka? Anybody know? It's known as a slow, thin sound, a still, thin sound. That's the way that it's translated. Yahu says, okay, that, and Hashem is found, so to speak. That's when Hashem begins to speak. He's found in the still, thin sound, the kol demamad daka. And it is an Eliyahu. Here's this. Hashem says, what are you doing here? He says, I've done so hard for the Jewish people, but nothing worked, so take my soul. And Hashem says, no, I want you to do a couple of things. And then we have the famous prophecy that Eliyahu doesn't actually die. Eliyahu goes, is already past the Haftarah, but Eliyahu doesn't die. Eliyahu is kind of taken into a chariot, and he's brought up to Shemayim. And Eliyahu appears Ad Hayom Hazeh under two scenarios, where there's two famous times that Eliyahu shows up, Brit Milah and Seder Night, right? That's when Eliyahu shows up, right? So that's the story. So what does it mean? What does it mean? What's the story? What is the story of Eliyahu teaching us? What happened there? And I think the key is within that term. Jezebel turns to Eliyahu and says, tomorrow I'm going to have you die. So why didn't she just say today? Or why did Eliyahu fight back? What's the meaning of that, tomorrow I'm going to die? So Jezebel turns to Eliyahu. Anyone know an answer to all this? Anyone, what's the message?
She's trying to use him?
What do you mean?
That she sent him a message, tomorrow you're going to die?
What does he mean?
What? She wants to get back at him, or...
Well, she does. She clearly wants to get back at him. But what's the pshat in that? And why does Eliyahu hear that and run away and say, that's it, there's no hope for the Jewish people, God take me now, right? That day he had just brought fire from Shemayim and everybody yelled at Hashem Elohim. Hashem Elohim, seems like everything is great. And Ezebel says those things and Eliyahu says, I'm out of here.
Maybe it's like that all that power comes from Hashem. So the thing is, you don't know if tomorrow that power of Hashem will come to protect you. So I think maybe he realized that. He said, I have to go and, you know, connect to Hashem in order to...
By dying?
No, by running away from dying. Instead of... Because the thing is, he himself doesn't have the power. It's the power of God. He himself doesn't have the
that's
power
true.
To summon the thing. So that's okay. Why he ran away, because he said, only God is the one who can protect me from this.
God can protect
you.
That
is the one that would have been stronger to say, like you said, yeah, in the beginning. Right. Why didn't he think in the beginning, well, you know, I just proved everybody wrong. They're now jumping up and down. They're now saying, we recognize Hashem. And so... Assuming your question is, so right, why is it now that he could flip like that automatically? You assume that his emunah would still be 100% and be like, well, you know what, I got God on my side, you can do whatever you want.
So
I agree with what you're saying, but what I was going to say is that she's showing in a sense of her power. It's like when you're going to fight with someone, or, you know, you always see in the mom movies, the talent guys, no, 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 they always say just wait until tomorrow, you know? There's nothing to worry about today because tomorrow I'm going to take care of it.
Right.
And I think it was kind of moving to what you were saying in the sense that she's like, yeah, you might have proven us wrong today, but tomorrow I can get you.
Right.
So besides the fact, like I'm saying, she's saying, look, your guy's not going to protect you all the time.
Right.
Which is why he could have gotten scared and understood that. I think in the sense of the more now. That's my real question.
Very good. So what's going to change tomorrow?
Does that show faith by... What are you going to, like, kill yourself for what? What's all the reason saying I'd rather die?
Well, what's good... Well, okay, so... And not only does he say I'm going to die, so I'm going to die, implying that this is the future...
That last. So that Eliyahu maybe has to come to every verse to see that, hey...
Very good. That's the end of the show.
Comes and listen, Hashem's like, oh, I'm going to make sure that's here.
That's why he's got to keep coming back. Why is Eliyahu Hanavi say that there's, at this point he says there's no hope? He says, what are you saying? Yizevel, you're right, and there's no hope. So I think that the approach to take to this whole story, what just flipped right there. So actually, a few psukim earlier, there's a Gemara in Brachos that says, Eliyahu Hanavi says, Aneni Hashem Meineni. Right, answer me, Hashem, answer me. Why does it say Aneni twice? So, just answer me. Right? So Hashem is saying, the Gemara says, answer me, bring down fire from Shemayim, v'aneni, and answer me, shelo yomru maisa kishofim, that they won't say that it's an act of magic. What do you mean? What is that? Afraid of an act of magic? So the idea is that, listen, Eliyahu says, I could bring down fire from the heavens, but I can't stop that guy in the back of the shul that's going to make a joke right after it's over. And ultimately, whatever Eliyahu said, I could do the greatest miracles. I could do things that have never been done before and nobody's ever seen it before. But yet, people come down from that. There's either a line that people could say, there's a cynical line that people could do, or ultimately things go back to its routine. You know, we're entering into the 3 weeks. And you think about the 3 weeks, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is telling them, this is exactly what's going to happen. They had Yeshaya HaNavi telling them, this is what's going to happen, and the prophecies are coming true. We often think today, oh, if only we had prophet. I mean, we're stuck with Nebuch, you know, only Gedolim. We're stuck only with rabbis. If only we had a prophet. The prophets were never listened to. the story of...
Well, yeah, think about it. There were so many fake prophets, too. I mean,
Book of Nevi'im, the story of Yeshaya, of Yirmiyah, of Yecheskel, of Yeshua, of the Shoftim, is that the Nevi'im are never listened to. Right? They could do amazing things, but yet, ultimately, it just doesn't work. So Eliyahu turns to Yizevel, says, you're right. Today I can't touch you, Eliyahu. Today you're on top of the world. Today you just did something amazing and all the people will come to your aid. But tomorrow, it's already going to start fading away. And the day after that, they're barely going to remember. So Eliyahu turns around and says, she's right. She's right. How often can I do this? How often can I do this kind of thing? And that's when he turns to Hashem and says, Hashem, it's not going to work. So what does Hashem do? Hashem shows him those images. He shows him the idea of the great explosions and the great winds and the great fires. And Navi says, and Hashem wasn't there. Hashem was in the kol demadaka. God was in the slow, thin sound, the slow, consistent thing that is constantly there. That's where one's ultimately going to find Hashem. And that's where he's comforted, right? He's found in the idea that even simple Jews, you know, the two mitzvahs most widely kept by Jews are those two, Brit Milah and the Pesach Seder, right? Those, even at a Brit Milah or a
everybody does it.
Or a Seder where they're serving non-kosher food.
Yeah, you always hear them.
Yeah, even
the
Jews are going to shul 3 times a year. It's like,
Pastoral. For sure. My block, I live in a block that's mostly Jews. Not too many are members of my shul. And there's 2 nights of the year where you can't find a parking spot on my block. Right? Yom Kippur night, or Yom Kippur afternoon, meaning break fast, the afternoon on my way to Mincha, they're all getting together, and Seder night, you can't find a parking spot on my block. Right, it's packed. There are a couple of things that people do. So Hashem is telling Eliyahu, I'm going to make you go to every bris, not just the really frum ones, but even the ones that aren't so religious. And you're going to see that there is hope for the Jewish people. That they are going to get together. They will remember me at least once a year. They will remember me when a child is born. They will instill that within their kids. But Eliyahu, if you're not going to have that emunah, if you're not going to have that faith, you're not going to be able to be the leader. You're going to have to appoint others to be the leader. And now, I remember once, you know, going through this story, I think, oh, it's a perfect thing to talk about Parshas Pinchas. But the truth, the story of going on Har Carmel, the problem is, that's not in the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas. The Parshas Pinchas Haftorah is about the aftermath. Is the story of Ezekiel telling Yeshua, telling Eliyahu, a Navi, you know, I'm going to come get you, and the story of the prophecies. So it's like, wait a second. Pinchas is the prototypical zealot. He's supposed to match Eliyahu. Why wouldn't you tell the story of Eliyahu's zealotry in the story of Parshas Pinchas? And perhaps the answer is that the story of Pinchas' zealotry isn't found in Parshas Pinchas either. Pinchas' zealotry happens at the end of last week's Parsha. The idea of killing Zimri and Kozbi, that's last week's Parsha. That's how it ends. This week's Parsha is, now Pinchas, you're going to be a Kohen. Now Pinchas, you're going to be the one who's going to do my constant avoda. You're going to be the one who's going to be the one in the Beis HaMikdash, day in and day out, doing all the things that are necessary. Yes, you did something amazing last week that stopped the plague, that woke everyone up. That was amazing. But the only way that that's ever going to last is if you could then transfer that into something that's going to be constant. And perhaps this Haftorah is not going on the Parsha's Pinchas part of the Parsha, but rather it's going on a very important pasuk that appears later on in the Parsha. Because this Parsha has a lot of different stories, there's a lot of different things going on, but the second half of the Parsha, the last three or four aliyahs, is about the korbanos, the sacrifices that are given. We talk about the korbanos that are given on holidays, on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuos. I talk about all those sacrifices, on Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, but it starts with the daily offering. You're going to bring a korban in the morning, and you're going to be a korban in the evening. Yes, Pinchas, that will be your parsha. While Pinchas, the first thing that comes to mind may be that you were a zealot and you fought and you stepped up when nobody else was ready to step up. The way that that's going to be translated, your parsha, though, Pinchas, is going to be about the consistency of Jewish worship. When ultimately wants to find the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you're going to have to find him not in the creative, amazing, miraculous acts that's good to catch our attention, but ultimately God is only grasped in the constant daily, you know, korban in the morning, korban in the afternoon. We daven in the morning, we daven in the afternoon, we make brachos, we bench. Every day there's mitzvahs that we do that are incorporated within our regular lives. So although Pinchas and Eliyahu are the stories of zealotry, the results of it, the things that come right after it, is our lesson for this week. Yes, it's true, those are important, those need to happen, but it's what happens on a regular daily basis. That's really what keeps us. That's really where we will find the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the cold and mamadaka, in the slow, thin sound. Yeah.